I'm Tracy Sable tonight on EWTN News Nightly. 2 weeks to go. As Election Day draws closer, former President Trump and Vice President Harris hit the campaign trail trying to sway undecided voters. Change of strategy. Democrats make a late push for pro-life votes. One political strategist weighs in. Life on the line. The execution of a Texas death row inmate is on hold for now. We learn more about the case and how Catholics are responding. Plus, four more years. New developments in the Vatican's agreement with China on the appointment of Catholic bishops in the communist country. These stories and more tonight.
From EWTN, the Global Catholic Network, this is EWTN News Nightly.
Thank you for being with us on the feast of Pope St. John Paul II. Our top story tonight, exactly 2 weeks until Election Day. Former President Barack Obama and Democratic vice presidential nominee Tim Walz hosted a rally in Wisconsin. That's where in-person early voting kicked off today. And former President Donald Trump began his day meeting with Latino leaders at his Doral Golf Club in Florida. White House correspondent Owen Jensen reports. Owen.
Tracy, the race for the White House moving at full throttle now. In addition to what you just laid out, Vice President Kamala Harris planned to tape interviews with Telemundo and NBC, and GOP Vice Presidential nominee J.D. Vance campaigning in Arizona. But we'll start in the battleground Badger State.
Stumping for Kamala Harris, former President Barack Obama and Democratic Vice Presidential nominee Tim Walz visit the capital of Wisconsin, Madison, bringing this message to voters.
It takes stamina to run for president. It takes stamina to be president. And Donald Trump does not have stamina.
Back in 2020, Donald Trump lost Wisconsin by just under 21,000 votes. This time around, another razor-thin margin there is expected.
The point is, Tim will be an outstanding vice president, but he's only going to be an outstanding vice president if you vote. And that's why you're here today.
In South Florida, the Miami suburb of Doral, Trump holds a roundtable addressing Hispanic voters and leaders. Miami, home to one of the largest Hispanic communities in the country. Today, Trump slamming his opponent for the Oval Office.
She's lazy as hell, and she's got that reputation. She's a radical left lunatic. She's further left than Bernie Sanders or Pocahontas.
Meanwhile, President Joe Biden, who dropped out of the presidential race this past summer, welcomed Slovenia's prime minister to the White House. And shortly after, President Biden flew off to Manchester, New Hampshire, talking prescription drug prices. New Hampshire has backed Democrats in seven of the last eight presidential elections.
One of the proudest things I've ever done was pass the Inflation Reduction Act, that allowed us to negotiate lower prices for prescription drugs.
Now, former President Donald Trump holds a rally tonight in Greensboro, North Carolina. Tomorrow he visits Georgia, I should say. And Vice President Kamala Harris will participate in a CNN town hall, that's tomorrow, in Pennsylvania. At the White House, Owen Jensen, EWTN News Nightly.
And staying on the campaign trail, Vice President Harris is making a last-second push for pro-life votes. In an event last night, former Republican Liz Cheney joined Harris on stage and said there is a path for pro-lifers to reject Republican nominee Donald Trump.
I think there are many of us around the country who have been pro-life, but who have watched what's going on in our states since the Dobbs decision, and have watched state legislatures put in place laws that are resulting in women not getting the care they need.
In Congress, Cheney once received a top grade from Susan B. Anthony Pro-Life America. The same group gave Kamala Harris an F. Cheney's remarks come one day after Republican vice presidential candidate J.D. Vance said Catholics feel abandoned by the Biden-Harris administration. And to help us unpack all of this is Kristen Hahn, Democrat strategist with Roque Solutions. Kristen, good to be with you today. Vice President Harris is seen by many as a big advocate for so-called abortion rights. In fact, she's the first vice president ever to actually make a campaign stop at an abortion clinic. So why is she now making a push for the pro-life vote?
I think because I think former Congresswoman or Congresswoman Liz Cheney said it quite perfectly that as a result of the Dobbs decision, there have been repercussions in the state. And Donald Trump likes to talk a lot about, you know, everybody wants that decision to go to the states. Well, that's just not true. But what you're seeing the effect of some of these stringent laws is that they're not pro-life at all because they endanger the life of women. And elections, I always say, you know, have to do as much with your heart as with your head. And when it comes to decisions about healthcare, women's healthcare, that's very personal to a lot of people. And we're seeing a lot of these things happen. So it makes a lot of sense that she would go out and talk to not just women, but people across the country who may have been voting for candidates who are strictly pro-life, but who are looking at this issue now as a broader women's health issue.
Let me ask you this. You're a strategist. Considering Harris's strong support for abortion, many think extreme, do you think trying to now garner the pro-life vote, do you think that will help or hurt her, especially with her base? What would you advise her?
I mean, I would advise her to do exactly what she's doing right now. I think that, you know, the base is behind her. The base knows, you know, the decision that is before us right now, and it's never been more stark. Donald Trump or Kamala Harris, and you may have small disagreements with her here and there, but the base is behind her. What's important, what I would advise, is to make sure that you're going after these independent votes, some of these center-right votes. These voters who truly, you know, are attending these rallies or watching these and saying, OK, I really don't want Donald Trump for another term. It's too chaotic for me. It's too extreme for me. A lot of people who don't feel like he's truly even a Republican, you know, are looking at her. And what she's doing is she's going on non-traditional, you know, into non-traditional venues, talking to voters that may not have heard from her directly before, including her interview on Fox News and doing events like she did yesterday with Liz Cheney, and not being afraid to speak to voters that normally you wouldn't think that she would be speaking directly to. But I don't think it hurts her with her base at all.
Okay. We have a little less than a minute left or so. You know, and we know abortion is one of the top election issues. But do you think it's a make or break issue in the race? How do you see this?
I think it's a pivotal issue in the race, up with, you know, the economy, how people are doing. Are they able to put food on the table? But it certainly, as we've seen all the way down ballot into these House races, it is a hugely personal issue. People are seeing the repercussions of the Dobbs decision, and it's no longer just black and white. It's a women's health issue. And I think it will be really, you know, instrumental in as we look to see how this election turns out for the presidential election. Senate races and House.
All right, Kristen, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
And the final weeks before the 2024 election, Senate Democrats are facing a number of Republican challengers to flip their seats. With the current Democrat majority 51-49, the party cannot afford to lose any seats. Capitol Hill correspondent Eric Rosales joins us now in the studio on a pair of hotly contested races that could decide who controls the Senate. Eric.
Good evening, Tracy. As we take a look at the map of the United States, a number of states are going to have the eyes of the nation upon them. They include states like Arizona, Nevada, Montana, Texas, Wisconsin, Michigan, Pennsylvania, and of course, Ohio. All races, close races right now that the polls show could go either way. I want to focus on the last two. First of all, Ohio, where current Democratic Senator Sherrod Brown is taking on a GOP newcomer, Bernie Moreno. New polling shows that these two are neck and neck. Take a look at that, 47-46. Just 1 point separates the two. This race ranks as one of the most expensive this election cycle, with millions of dollars in outside money pouring in.
50 years, never had a job in the private sector ever, let alone create a business. And he runs the banking committee. It's a total disgrace. This is the year Sherrod Brown's time's up, and we're going to get rid of him.
Meanwhile, Brown has been in office since 2007 in a state that former President Donald Trump won by 8 points in 2020.
When you take on the drug companies, when you take on Wall Street, when you take on these companies that outsource jobs, they come after you. And I knew they would. The hundreds of millions of dollars. We're going to win in spite of that.
Now we're going to move on to Pennsylvania, where Republican newcomer Dave McCormick is working to unseat the current senator, Bob Casey, who's been in the Senate since 2000. 2007. Take a look at these poll numbers. New polling shows McCormick with just a slight lead over Bob Casey, 48-47. McCormick is a combat veteran and former chief executive officer of a major hedge fund. He opposes abortion except in the rare cases of rape, incest, or to save the life of the mother, and believes the issue should be left up to the states. He says it's time for change.
For 18 years, Bob Casey has been warming a chair and drawing a paycheck. He is a do-nothing, out-of-touch, liberal career politician.
Casey, who once called himself a pro-life Democrat, now supports the protections under Roe v. Wade and is seeking a fourth term in the upper chamber.
I've also passed legislation to make sure that women on college campuses are better protected from sexual assault. That's happening all across the country. They have better protections today because of my legislation.
And tomorrow I'm going to continue to take a closer look at some of the other top races across the country, races that will ultimately decide control of the U.S. Senate. Tracy, back to you.
All right. Thank you, Eric. And now to the Middle East, where Secretary of State Antony Blinken is making his 11th visit to the region since the war in Gaza began last year. The Secretary of State met with Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to work on further proposals for a ceasefire. The meeting lasted more than 2 hours, and Netanyahu called it, quote, friendly and productive. It comes after the leak of highly classified U.S. intelligence documents on Israel's plans for retaliation against Iran. An investigation is underway on how the material was made public. And we have a lot more still to come here on EWTN News Nightly, including medical question, analysis of a death penalty case in Texas, and why the former CEO of a popular clothing brand, Abercrombie & Fitch, is facing federal charges. Welcome back. A death penalty case in Texas could hinge on a medical question. Did Robert Roberson's 2-year-old daughter die from shaken baby syndrome or complications related to pneumonia? Roberson was sentenced to death in 2003. His lawyers argued the conviction was based on an outdated science. And now a group of Democrat and Republican lawmakers are rushing to his defense. This comes as Republican Governor Greg Abbott says last night's hearing intervening in the death penalty sentence was, quote, out of line. Robertson was set to be executed late last week, and one church leader says that he is praying that it never takes place.
I know that in my own diocese, I received letters from within the diocese as well as from outside the diocese, phone calls, emails simply saying, please, please speak on behalf of Mr. Robertson. We need to raise our voices up in defense of this man. And so definitely we as bishops in the state of Texas have done that. We have spoken very clearly that this man should not be executed. We believe that indeed he is innocent and that at least his case should be reviewed to allow those who have decision powers over this to be able to review his case and make a decision.
In 2018, Pope Francis changed the Catechism of the Catholic Church to say that, quote, the death penalty is inadmissible. Robert Roberson was sentenced to die last Thursday, but a bipartisan group of Texas lawmakers worked together to stop the execution for now. Democratic State Representative Joe Moody is the chairman of a state House committee who led the effort. He's also Catholic. Moody explained to EWTN News Nightly how his views on the death penalty shifted after Pope Francis changed the church's stance on the issue.
In certain circumstances, it's okay. And that was the position of the church up until that point. And for me, I could rationalize that there are bad people that do bad things, and this is punishment that is warranted in certain cases, and that was a position I held. And when the Pope made those changes, I mean that spoke to my heart, and it also made me sit and think about my rationale. A lot of times we ask whether someone deserves to die. And that's not the right question. It is, do we have the right to kill them? And when you put that in context with your faith, like I have, the only answer you can come to, and the Pope's pronouncement on this is very clear, no, we don't have that right, because you're depriving that individual of the opportunity to be molded and shaped by God. And in fact, Robert, when we met with Robert, we prayed with him. His faith is very important to him. I think he spends most of his time in prison studying and developing his faith and his relationship with God. And it was on display when we met with him. We met with him for over 90 minutes a couple weeks ago. And when we sat and prayed with him, you know, we prayed for him and prayed for the very dire circumstances that were there. And we asked for, you know, whatever God's will is, let's let that work in this situation. And when it stopped, he started to pray for us. Pray for us in our work. And it was a powerful moment. You know, we talk about the power of prayer a lot, but that was a moment I will never forget. He told us, I'm never going to forget that you guys came here and you prayed with me. And I told him, we assured him, we will never forget that.
All right, for more, I want to bring in another lawmaker from Texas, Republican State Representative Lacey Hall. Representative Hall, thank you so much for joining us. We just heard from a Democrat lawmaker, and you're, of course, a Republican who is actually on the same side of this issue. Is it unusual in Texas for Democrats and Republicans to come together like this, and why this issue?
This bipartisan effort to help save Robert Roberson is like nothing I have ever seen before. I'm very proud to be a member of the Texas House.
And why do you think he deserves a new trial?
We have seen, if you go back and look at the trial records, if you look at everything filed by the defense and the state, if you listen to the two committee hearings that we have had last week and this week, you will hear and see that it's very clear Robert did not have a proper defense and he did not have a fair trial. He did not have due process. And so that is what we are asking for Robert to have a new trial.
All right. And Governor Greg Abbott says lawmakers, quote, stepped out of line with last night's hearing. Your thoughts on that? And if you had a chance to respond to him, what would you say?
Within the legislature, we have to make sure that our laws that we pass as the state of Texas are being followed. And it's very clear that our junk science statute was not followed here, that the courts were not granting relief under that statute. They were not giving Robert a new trial under that statute. So it is the legislators' ability and their purpose to make sure, and the oversight that we have to make sure that our laws are followed. And that is what the House Committee on Criminal Jurisprudence did, to see and investigate what happened, was the law followed, and what changes do we need to make?
Representative Hall, I know one thing we mentioned is one of the questions was a medical question, whether it was shaken baby syndrome or pneumonia. What new information came out about that?
Well, one of the original jurors testified yesterday about that exact thing. The whole trial, as the juror said, and what you can see in the trial record, from start, middle, and end, is about shaken baby. They never presented any other possible explanation. So all of her medical history, how she had breathing apnea, viral and bacterial pneumonia, all of her medical conditions were never shared with the jury. So they never had a chance to hear any of that.
Well, thank you so much for coming on and sharing all this with us. We really appreciate it. A very important case.
Thank you.
The former CEO of Abercrombie & Fitch has been arrested on sex trafficking and interstate prostitution charges, as well as allegations from young people against Mike Jeffries. They say that they were promised modeling jobs but were pressed into sex acts. Jeffries' lawyers say that he will respond once the indictment is unsealed and plans to do so in the courthouse and not the media. Up next on EWTN News Nightly, cause for concern. The faithful react to a satanic black mass to be held later this week in Atlanta, Georgia. The Vatican announces a renewal of its agreement with China on the appointment of bishops. The Holy See says the deal will continue for four more years. In a statement, the Holy See says that both sides agree to the extension after, quote, appropriate consultation and assessment. Pope Francis has expressed satisfaction in the dialogue with China, but the move comes days after the Hudson Institute reported that seven bishops in China have been detained without due process. A church leader in France is speaking out ahead of a controversial street performance featuring satanic imagery. The Archbishop of Toulouse says that he is consecrating the southwestern French city to the Sacred Heart of Jesus in response to next weekend's Gate of Darkness event. The consecration is therefore for us an invitation to conversion to show in our wounded world something of the new world born of the pierced heart of Jesus. All right, now to the United States, where the faithful in Atlanta, Georgia, are reacting to an upcoming satanic black mass. Archbishop Gregory Hartmeyer is leading the efforts to pray and make reparations ahead of Friday's event planned for the so-called Satanic Temple. Archbishop Hartmeyer calls the event, quote, a blasphemous and obscene inversion of the Catholic Mass. Other church leaders are also weighing in. And for analysis, we turn now to Father Carlos Martins, producer and host of the Exorcist Files podcast, which has millions of downloads. He is also the author of the upcoming book, The Exorcist Files, True Stories about the Reality of Evil and How to Defeat It. Father Martins, welcome back. Great to have you on the show again. So tell us, how concerning are these events and why do you think they're happening now? What's the significance here?
Certainly. Well, in terms of sacredness, this is a very sacrilegious event. These are people who are mocking us. They're mocking our faith, but more importantly, they're mocking God. And these folks state on their website, the folks responsible for this black mass, that they don't believe in God or Satan. So this is just simply a pure provocation. It's a provocation on behalf of a bully because they know that we're not going to fight back. They wouldn't do this against the Muslims because it would provoke violence. We are not a violent people. We are a peace-loving people. Nevertheless, we respond with prayer. We respond with reparation and penance because these are people who Jesus wants to be saved. And so he invites us now in this moment to make prayers and suffrages on their behalf.
Yeah, and what is the purpose of this so-called Black Mass? I mean, why is it taking place on a Friday?
Sure. Well, on the Friday, that one's easy to answer because Friday is the day of the Lord's Passion. And so it's a mockery of the Passion. You know, Satanism, there's two kinds of Satanists or two kind of satanic entities. Cultic Satanism and individual Satanism. Cultic Satanism, these are old cults. Many of them are ancient. You never hear about them because they operate secretly. They don't want new membership. They raise their members internally. So these are old, akin to the strategy of the mafia. Almost no one is able to enter into the mafia save from those in a select group that are already related to the family. That is cultic Satanism. Individual Satanism, the folks who do that, they are folks who would be willing to advertise themselves, to identify themselves as Satanists. But those folks cover the gamut. Some of them, as in the case of this group here that are celebrating and organizing the Satanic Black Mass, they don't even believe in God. They don't even believe in the devil. So they adopt the figure of the devil, they subscribe to the label Satanism because that asserts their independence. It asserts their autonomy. But you can have folks within that group who believe in the devil and who have the same belief that we have in God, although the devotion is perverted. They believe he is the bad guy and Satan is the good guy. So the gamut is covered. And this group has already identified where on the spectrum they land. And so for us, our response should be one of prayer. We are being attacked. Our faith is being ridiculed. Our faith is being desecrated. If they in fact stole one of the Eucharistic hosts from a parish to be used in the Mass, there is a profound act of sacrilege there. And the church responds like it always responds, with prayer and supplication.
Father Martins, we don't have a whole lot of time left, but I quickly want to ask you this. Are we seeing an uptick in these types of activities? And if so, are there certain areas of, say, the world where they're more prevalent?
Sure. I mean, we are seeing an uptick because we're seeing an abandonment of Christianity and an embracing of paganism. So these kinds of things, they are going to increase. But this, with a group like this, this is a simple provocation. These are not people with religious motives. They are motives of, they're provocatory motives, motives of bullying and of kind of disturbing the peace, if you will. They merit our prayers. But I don't think this kind of event is something that merits more of a concern than that.
All right, that's good to know. Father Martins, thank you so much for coming on and speaking to us about all this. We appreciate it. God bless you.
Thank you. God bless you.
Finally tonight, as we mentioned earlier, today is the feast of Pope St. John Paul II. 46 years ago today, he ascended to the chair of St. Peter. His pontificate lasted more than 26 years, the third longest in church history. He was canonized in April of 2021. Among his accomplishments was helping to bring about the 1989 fall of communism in Eastern Europe. He was also beatified and canonized more saints than any of his predecessors. St. John Paul II, pray for us. And we thank you for watching tonight. Remember, you can follow us on social media, Facebook, X, and Instagram at EWTN News Nightly. I'm Tracy Sable. Good night, and God bless.